Hello.
Hey John, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
So,
See you.
I know I don't get to see people anymore. I just sit in my basement here. So,
Yeah, about the same.
yeah. So, now where are you living again? You're in Virginia again?
In Virginia, just outside of DC.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, so back home for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's I've lived now, my house is now about 3 miles from where I grew up. So,
There you go.
yeah.
So, did that was that move prompted because of work or?
Yeah, so for me, so we in Iowa, the opportunity for me to oversee more than just autos for US News came up. And then, of course, one of the conditions was, but you got to be in DC. So we moved back, and then everybody stopped going to the office. So I guess I have to, but
Now is your Did you move out there because of your husband's job? Because of the.
we moved to Iowa because of my husband's job.
Yeah.
And then we moved back here, so mine, but because he's a federal worker, it's
Yeah.
pretty easy for him. He works with the Marshals Service. He was overseeing the district in Iowa, the northern district
Okay.
of Iowa. But now he works at headquarters, and it's actually pretty funny because he's a big he's a cop's cop. He likes to go out, he likes to arrest people, and now he's working on they're redoing the software program that they use to track and arrest people and that kind of thing, and he's building that. So it's a big shift for him going from working, working warrants to now working with a bunch of software developers.
Oh, that's interesting, I guess.
It's a new challenge. I like it. He's home by 5 and he's not out on the street, dealing with dangerous people. So
There you go. And for some reason, and I don't know why, I just lost the feed to the Facebook page. So why would this go well? Let's see. Let's see if it pops back up again. Everybody's online. That's the problem.
Yep.
Let's see if it, and it may just be because I was wasting time. So maybe we'll start a few minutes early.
Whatever works for
Well,
you.
we'll see. And it takes, what's really weird is it takes something like 10 seconds to go from Zoom to Facebook. So, and maybe they just where I didn't go live yet. Maybe Facebook just times it out or something. So,
Maybe. I don't know. This is, yeah, I haven't done one of these.
Well, this is the first one of this style.
Ooh.
We normally use GoToWebinar. The problem is for people to watch it, they have to register.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that just don't want to register for stuff. And I don't either. So, this was my grand plan. I'll buy a Zoom account, and if you do that, you get to register, you get to post to social media. So I'm like, perfect, this will be great. We'll get all
Yeah.
these instantaneous views, and we'll see.
We'll see. US News, like they have some kind of special Zoom, like it's a Zoom webinar account or something like that for you. Like, but there's always like a tech guy running it. So you just have to show up and, every once in a while he'll come in and say, like, we have a question and it says this. So
That's how GoToWebinar works too. But I was talking to Lisa Barrow and she said FCA is prohibited from using Zoom.
oh, because of the security concerns?
And I'm like, well, that was like a few months ago. I think they would have got over that by now. But so I don't know. So
Yeah, I don't really see anything. I mean, there's no perfect solution.
We had a guy from a company called Uptain, and they're kind of a anti-hacking thing out of NYU, and he would only call into the thing through his phone. He's like, I don't download any codecs into my computer. And he's trying to sell his business, I think. He's being somewhat funded by the US military too,
It's always interesting.
yeah, but he's like, he says, I drive a 77 Corvette because you can't hack it, and I'm like,
I kind of don't blame him for that. I mean, I just enjoy a 77 Corvette because those still feel like machines as opposed
it does. They're
to.
kind of rough and weird and make noises and all kinds of stuff. All right, I'm gonna hit go live on Facebook and
Okay.
count to 10 and I'll introduce you and we'll go from there.
All right, sounds good.
But anyway. Who knows what's going to happen? Because the Zoom is only you and me right now, so it's so,
okay.
Yeah. Well, good morning, everyone. My name's John Paul, and I'm AAA's car doctor at AAA Northeast, also the senior manager of public affairs and traffic safety. And welcome to another edition of AAA's Car Conversations With. And today the with is Jamie Page Deaton of U.S. News and World Report. Jamie, good morning and welcome to Car Conversations.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. First off, you have a title that confounds me somewhat. I liked it when you were auto editor. I kind of just knew what that meant. But kind of tell us about a little bit about you and what you do at U.S. World News Report.
Sure. So I am the executive editor for growth opportunities at U.S. News and World Report. And I agree, it's kind of a weird title, but basically what it means is I oversee areas of content that are new for US News, that are growth areas. And so that, you know, in practice, that means I oversee the autos team, I oversee the travel team, and I oversee a newer vertical called 360, where we review consumer products. And the main difference between these verticals and other verticals at US News is the way that that we help consumers. So if you go, for example, to an article on the health by the health team at US News, you're gonna be able to read about the best diets for diabetes or something like that. But if you go over to the autos channel, we're not only gonna help you find the right car to buy, we're actually gonna help you buy it. And it's the same with travel. We'll help you find the right vacation and then we'll help you book it. And then on 360, we'll help you find things like the right life insurance policy or the best home security system, and then we'll help you buy it. So it's that extra step of we're gonna help you buy it that is new for US News. It's a growth area for us. And so I oversee that type of content.
Well, that sounds fantastic. And the good news is you kind of moved back home almost, right? Yeah. I knew you when you were up in New Hampshire. That's kind of where we first met, through the New England Motor Press Association. And then we'd bump into each other at different auto shows. And then you moved out to Iowa. So you got to experience everything Iowa has to offer.
Exactly.
Now back to Virginia.
Yeah, and actually before I was in New England, I actually lived in Texas for 2 years. And so now I'm back in Northern Virginia, which is where I'm from. But I actually found, that living all over the country like I have is a huge help when it comes to writing about cars and talking about cars. Because just in the DC area, we have a very specific car culture. It tends to be very luxury and very electric focused. But then, living in, New Hampshire, we see a lot of obviously Subarus because it's New England, but a lot more older cars, a lot more trucks. You go out to Iowa, it's definitely a lot of trucks, a lot of large SUVs, and then a surprising number of large sedans. And then same in Texas. So having that, I feel like having that moving around actually made me a lot better at my job because I got to see, the full breadth of kind of driving culture in the United States and all the different, geography really does play a role in, what kind of car you should select. This one kind of car, if you wanted like a big sedan in New England, it's not going to work all that well. But man, in Iowa, where the road is just straight and you can just get in it and just comfortably ride, from Minnesota down to Mexico, like that is an ideal car for that those types of roads.
Yeah, there's nothing like a car that feels a little bit like your living room couch, I guess. So you can spread out and get comfortable and just enjoy the ride. Well, back in March, I think it was March, look at my calendar here, March 13th was the last day I was in the office. And because of the pandemic, the auto industry has changed quite a bit. I've talked to car dealers who closed for a couple months. I talked to some who's kept their repair shop sides open, but stopped sales. Some are doing contact-free delivery. Some are trying to bring cars to people's homes and drop them off and let them road test them overnight, and then they come back and sanitize them. What are you seeing in the auto industry, both maybe at the local level, but also at the manufacturer end?
So at the local level, it's a lot of the same stuff that you're seeing, a lot of contactless delivery. I actually live near an area of town that has a lot of car dealerships. So we see a lot of people on test drives, all masked up and wearing gloves and trying to do it safely. Because, and in a lot of cases, you'll see them with no salesperson in the car with them, which honestly, I think a lot of consumers would prefer because it gives you a chance to go over the car on your own. And then the contactless delivery is something that we've seen, and buying from home is something that we've seen a lot of interest from our users. There's a ton of search interest around it. So dealers aren't offering that kind of service, they're really missing out on sales. And it's really, overall, it's starting to accelerate the shift towards a more online style of car buying. Now, some dealers already offered this type of package where you could, look at the car online, you could get your financing online, and then you just need to really show up and sign the paperwork. This has accelerated that. And a lot of consumers, particularly younger consumers who are used to buying things online, really prefer it. And you can see that even prior to the pandemic, there were a lot of startups that were doing this, like Carvana, which is a used car dealer, where you could just basically buy the car, they drop it off, there's a return period if you don't like it. But beyond that, it's basically the same as ordering something off of Amazon. So we're really seeing a lot of acceleration towards that. The other thing that we're seeing is a lot of groups that weren't going to buy a car are now considering buying a car, because you have people now who don't feel safe on public transportation, and people who really want to have their own set of wheels, again, because it feels a lot safer when there's a virus around. And what's interesting about that is that's a lot of new conquests for automakers, but we don't quite know yet what segment those new potential buyers are going to end up in. And so, if you think about it, if somebody spent a lot of time and usually, commutes or travels by public transportation, it kind of makes intuitive sense that they would fall into or go for kind of smaller, more affordable cars. This could be a problem for some automakers that have abandoned those segments. So GM and Ford leaving sedans behind, they could, and small cars behind to focus more on crossovers, they could really be missing out on those buyers. But just the big caveat there is, we don't know where those buyers are going to land yet. So it just is a matter of, waiting and seeing. The other thing is, with a lot of the car dealers that were shut down and a lot of the used car auctions that were shut down, there is a major inventory squeeze on used cars. And this is really good news if you're going to trade in a car and buy a new one, because now used car values are on average up. I think the last thing I saw was that on average, used car values are $2,000 higher than they were at the point last year. So if you've got a car to trade in, that's great for you. But if you're looking to buy a used car, prices are pretty high right now. And so that's, going to put a little bit of a squeeze on your budget.
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking to somebody yesterday who had a 2015 BMW 320 all-wheel drive, and they were going to trade it in. They didn't like to trade in, so they decided they were going to sell it on their own. And I think he had it listed on Craigslist or something for $16,900, and he said, "What do you think of the price?" And I said, "You're priced about right for the car." I said, "But there's a bunch of those cars out there, so there's nothing that's really unique. At least it looks that way when you look at some of the different shopping sites." First person, it was on Craigslist for 6 hours. First person showed up and bought it. So, and just for the reason you said, they were looking for used cars under $18,000, and this BMW fit right in the sweet spot they wanted to buy it, and it sold right away. So he was happy. He thought he'd have to drop his price down to maybe high 14s, maybe low 15s, and it sold for 16. So and all because of that tight used car market. And when it comes to, like you said, that shift from people that normally take public transportation to buying cars. And yeah, you talk to the people that have moved out of the city to the suburbs now, or they're utilizing second homes that maybe they didn't really have two cars before, they only had one. And they're saying, well, if we're going to live in the suburbs, or we're going to live in our mountain house or our beach house or whatever the case is, we need that second car, even though we're working at home. So you're right, that has put a little bit of pressure on it. And you mentioned Carvana. I was in Central Florida, a place that I don't really care for. It's just a very boring area. But I drove by the Carvana place, and there really is a giant vending machine full of cars.
There's one up near me, and it's in Gaithersburg, Maryland, and it's so neat. I mean, what you can actually do with Carvana, you can actually have them drop off the car at your house. Right. But if you live near a vending machine, they will put it in the vending machine for you, and they give you a big token that you can load into the vending machine and get your car out of the vending machine. And honestly, if I was in the market for a used car, found what I wanted on Carvana, that is exactly what I would do, because it just seems so fun.
Yeah, I put a lot of quarters in vending machines before. I would love to see a car pop out at the bottom. I think that would be fun. So
yeah,
absolutely. And it is really interesting how, like you said, both at the retail level and, you know, the car manufacturers, and great for them, they've refocused and, you know, started providing, you know, PPEs and, you know, looked at their manufacturing, but on the same side, the manufacturing has slowed down. So you're right. You go by car dealers where you would normally see a maybe it's a Hyundai dealer. You would see a bunch of Sonatas and a bunch of Santa Fe's, and all of a sudden now you see a dozen or so because the manufacturing has slowed down a bit. And it'll be interesting to see. Any predictions out there when this will turn around a little bit?
I think it's, like everything else, it's really dependent on when there's a vaccine and when the vaccine is really in wide use. Because like you mentioned too, is, you know, the manufacturing has really slowed down for automakers because they have to have fewer shifts. They have to slow down for cleaning and, you know, in some cases stop the line for cleaning. And the other thing to remember too is, there is a major, you know, typhoon in over in Korea. That's going to interrupt shipping from cars and parts. You've got wildfires in California, you're entering hurricanes, you know, in the US. All of these things really do strongly impact the supply chain for automakers. You know, you don't have to just look at what the virus is doing in Detroit. You also have to look at what the virus is doing now in, you know, Tennessee, where a lot of Asian automakers have plants, in Alabama, in Georgia. Then you also need to know what it's doing in Mexico and what it's doing in Canada, because that's where a lot of parts suppliers are. And so there is just a slowdown of inventory widespread. For consumers, it means there's going to be a little bit less choice. You know, if there used to be a couple of dozen Hyundai, you know, Santa Fe's on a dealer lot, and now there's maybe 10 or 12 just, you know, to choose from, that's going to limit your choice. And it's also going to be more difficult. Now, usually, you know, when I buy a new car, I always will just go in and say, this is what I want. I don't care what's in your inventory. Can you do a dealer trade? And you know, do the deal that dealers are going to have less to trade with. So that type of deal is going to be a lot harder to do. So, I mean, I think things will eventually return to normal, but, you know, the biggest roadblock to that right now is the pandemic. There's still a lot of economic uncertainty around that. Automakers have really responded by offering kind of creative financing deals. A lot of the financing arms of automakers are offering, some forgiveness programs if you lose your job, you know, mm-hmm. in months after buying one of their cars, things like that. But it really is about, you know, consumer confidence as well. And we're seeing that kind of tightening up and going away a little bit, where people don't feel confident enough to buy a car. But there is, you know, it's one of those recoveries, I think, that's going to be fairly uneven. You know, you have the new buyers, you know, the people like you mentioned, who are able to move out of the cities, move to the suburbs, move to a second home, do their work from anywhere. Those folks are potentially new car buyers. But the flip side of that is you have a lot of people who might be getting priced out of the market because, you know, maybe they've been laid off, or just, you know, the prices of cars are just simply getting too high for a lot of people to afford. So it's a really uneven market right now. If you're in, you know, if you're in a place where you're catering to a lot of buyers who have money and are relatively safe from economic downturns, then you're going to be doing okay.
Right.
But if you're, you know, if you're serving, you know, the other side of the economy, then not so much. It's going to be a little bit longer before things return to normal.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that at least I've seen is that, you know, people are, you know, the people that are shopping who haven't shopped in a while are truly shocked at some of the prices now. And certainly these cars today have more technology in them than ever. And I always try to tell potential buyers, you need to road test the technology as much as you road test the car, because if you're, you know, if it's something as simple as just, you know, Apple CarPlay to your phone, and you may find it's the interface isn't exactly what you thought it was going to be, or maybe there's some compatibility issues because you bought the latest, greatest iPhone and the car manufacturer wasn't set up for it. And understanding the technology that's in a car. I read the other day that the average new car transaction price is like 38.9 now. Yeah. That is a lot of money, especially for someone that maybe hasn't bought a car in 10 years. And the last time they bought a car, it was a Toyota Camry for 22.5. And they're shocked at how much more cars cost.
Yeah, I mean, the price, I mean, I work in the industry and I'm continually shocked at by how much cars cost. You know, I was test driving a couple of weeks ago, the new Chevy Tahoe, and the one that they sent, and I used to own a Chevy Tahoe, but the one that they sent was stickering at over $76,000. And $76,000, you know, to my mind, like that's Range Rover money.
Yeah.
But no, now it's Chevy Tahoe money. So that is really shocking. But there are still some like really good deals to be had out there. So for example, like the Kia K5, tested that one, and you know, it was wonderful car, great to drive, great interior, plenty of room, you know, nice handling, good power. The technology worked really, really well.
Yeah.
Stickering for 32. And right. I had my, you know, my neighbor who drives an Audi, he came out and he was looking at it, he was like, this is a really nice car. And that's, you know, and I, you know, you could go for a Kia for 32 or a similar Audi, which is going to start well above 40 for the similar content, similar size. And so that's one of those things where there are deals out there, but the cost of new cars really is shocking. And you see people responding to that by leasing or right. going for these super long, you know, 72, 80 month loans. Which is really not the best idea in the world when it comes to, you know, financial health long-term. But if you, you know, what we're really seeing is people are shopping based on monthly payment and that's it. Not really thinking about the total cost of the car.
Yeah. Yeah. When people take out these loans of more than 4 years and then they decide either they're tired of the car and they want to trade it in, they found out, well, that low payment was great, but they owe way more on the car than the car's worth at that point, or worse yet, they get into some kind of crash and they didn't buy gap insurance, and all of a sudden now they get paid, they may not even get paid enough to pay off the loan depending on how long they've had the car. So, you know, there is some caveats in these long loans that people are taking out. They need to be aware of that. And you know, if you can get a loan for 3 years and it's 0% or close to 0%, yeah, that's a good deal. It's a car that they're putting that kind of incentive on because maybe it's not selling that well. Here in Massachusetts, where I live, there is an energy program going on now where you can buy a Chevrolet Bolt, the electric car. The base model is like $35,000, which is a lot of money for. I love the Bolt. I hadn't driven one until just a few months ago. I was really impressed with how well it worked. Some of the interior felt a little cheesy, but as far as functionality, it worked really, really well. But like, and the one was the premium one, so it was 42. But with this incentive program, if you trade in a car that's newer than 2006, that's worth more than $1,500, you can buy the car for like 22.5.
That's a deal.
Then it becomes a great deal.
Yeah.
So
similar to, I actually tested last week, the Mini SE, which is the electric Mini. And you know, you can stack various state and local incentives on that. And it brings the price down to under $20,000.
Wow.
Incredible, because it's one of the few electric cars I've driven where there wasn't it didn't feel like there was a compromise in the interior.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Mini is owned by BMW, so you get really good materials. But Minis are also, for small cars, very expensive. I mean, these are teeny tiny cars that you can option your way up well into the 40s,
right?
A subcompact car. But with the Mini Electric, the interior was beautiful, really nice leather, nice open sunroofs on the front and the back seat, and really well put together. And then, you know, you stack these incentives and it's under $20,000. You know, the only real issue that I had with it on it was the range was just absolutely terrible. I mean, the full range on it was only 108 miles on a full charge. And that is just not quite enough, because when you think about it, you know, if you pull into a charging station and you're going to charge it up to, you know, 80% in about 20 minutes, well, that only gets you about another 80 miles.
Right.
So like,
right.
It's a good city car, but man, you're not going to take it much farther than that.
Yeah. And people, even with the longer range cars, like the Tesla Model 3 or the Bolt or, you know, Kia and Hyundai's offerings right now that are well over 200 miles on a on a good day, you know, if the weather's right, you know, cold days, hot days will make a difference. They're pretty good, but people say to me, I got to go plug it in. And I said, how many things do you plug in now? You know, at the end of the night, I plug in my tablet, my phone, my laptop. And it's like, I might as well just plug in one more thing, and it might as well be my car. Yeah. And odd that I am in the business that I'm in and I don't have a garage. So electric cars to me kind of belong in garages because it does simplify the charging process until we get to the point where, like the newer cell phones, where you can put them on a charging pad and make it that much easier. We're not quite there with electric cars yet. You still need to plug them in, but it is getting easier. And when I do road test a car, I have an outlet right near the corner of my house. And even though I'm charging it up on, you know, regular house current, if I'm doing it every day and limiting my driving somewhat, or even my normal commute, which is 100 miles, pretty much I can charge, put that 100 miles back in overnight. Now, if I drove it a couple of days, let's see, today's Friday, it would fully charge by Monday morning, maybe. So it would be a bit of a challenge that way, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I find like I will charge electric cars at home, you know, and I just plug them in overnight, get whatever mileage I can. And then when we were going into the office, there's a number of charging stations near my office. So I could buy a couple hours at a charging station, go to work, come out, it's ready to go. It's also kind of nice here where I'm living. A lot of the parks have charging stations. Mm. I was able to like plug in the car, go for a hike, come back, car's fully charged. I would also say too, like, you know, you're seeing a lot of businesses add them, and which is kind of nice. Not that I feel like going into a lot of stores right now, but you know, a lot of the Starbucks around here, there's always a charger nearby, so you can go grab a cup of coffee, read your book, your car is charging up, even if you don't have, you know, access to a charger. But I tell you, the plugging in off the home electricity is always an adventure, just because like my house was built in the 70s. I don't think it was built particularly well. So I had the mini plugged in, and then I was vacuuming the dining room, which is on totally the opposite side of the house from the garage, and blew a fuse. I have no idea why, like those two outlets shouldn't have even been on the same circuit, but whatever, they were. They always learn to new things. And I was actually kind of shocked because I was just researching, you know, I'm starting to test a lot more electric cars. Getting a home charging station, you know, seems like a good idea. And some of them are actually quite affordable. I found them where the station itself was just, you know, $600.
Yeah.
Now getting somebody to install it is a little bit more than that, you know, especially, you know, with labor rates in your area. But I was actually pleasantly surprised because I was expecting it to be more than that. And then when you actually look at on a per, you know, per mile basis, how much it costs to charge the car versus gas. And it really is much more affordable, even if you have fairly high electricity rates. And you can always set it up so that your car only charges during, you know, off peak hours, paying a little bit less for the electricity there. But it really is, I mean, it is convenient to have a garage when you have an electric car. Just because you have that, you plug it in like your phone. It's not that
big. No, you get used to it. You, maybe not you personally, but you know, it's that time of year where a lot of parents traditionally would be sending their kids to college. And a lot of times that meant sending their kids and their car to college at the same time. And U.S. News and World Report came out with sort of a list of best cars for teens, which would kind of fit into that category. What was sort of the research behind that, and how'd you come up with your choices?
Yeah, so this is like everything that we do at US News. This is a data-driven list. This isn't just like me going out driving the car and being like, yeah, this would be cool for a teenager. No, what we do is first we start with a critic's recommendation score that comes directly from our new car rankings. Mm-hmm. And based on the collective assessment of the automotive media. And so we go through, we collect every published and credible review of a car. We have a team of researchers who score, you know, how strongly the critics recommend that car based on what they've written in their reviews. Yep. And then for best cars for teens, we weight that with safety, which means crash test scores. And we also rate it with reliability, because you don't want your teen, you know, broken down on the side of the road.
Right.
And then we also then start adding in available safety features within the car's given price class. So these are safety features that research has shown can either, you know, prevent an accident or really lessen the severity of an accident. Mm. And for new drivers, these types of safety features, and I'm talking about stuff like lane keeping assist, automatic emergency braking, for new drivers, these are technologies that help them develop their skills while also keeping them safe. Because even no matter how many hours that you take your kid behind the wheel and you know how many classes they have, when they're out on their own, they're still not going to be a skilled driver. It takes years of practice,
right,
just driving to actually get good at it. So having these technologies can really help. The other thing that that we also look at are technologies that help parents kind of keep an eye on their teen drivers, even when parents aren't in the car.
Yeah.
So a lot of these have smartphone apps that'll text you if the car is driven over a certain speed. They have systems like Ford's My Key system on the Escape, which is one of our winners, where you can set the teenager's key so that the car can't be driven over a certain speed when the teenager's driving it, where the radio won't turn on until all the seatbelts are buckled.
Yeah.
Things like that, that can really help, you know, you always want your teenager to drive as if you're in the passenger seat. So when you cannot physically be there, it helps to have the car kind of remind them that, no, we're going to develop good driving habits.
Right, right. Absolutely. And you're right about, you know, I always try to tell parents, it takes about 5 years to become a reasonably skilled driver. The second part of that is the part of your brain that assesses risk doesn't fully develop till you're 25 or 26 years old. Big surprise, a little older for guys than women. And that risk assessment part. So even though you've become a pretty good driver, you started at 16 and now you're 22 when you're like, I'm a great driver. What do you mean? That part that says it's risky or not hasn't fully developed yet. So sometimes you tend to take a little bit more chances than somebody who's a little bit older. So Yeah.
And that's the other thing too, that we really recommend that for parents, you want to buy your teen a car that is big, boring, and slow. And it's big, the biggest you can afford, because that gives more space for crash energy to dissipate. You know, it's right, going to dissipate around the car as opposed to in the passenger cabin. Boring, because you don't want your kids' friends to want to ride in this car because every passenger that rides with a teen driver increases the risk.
Your kids are going to hate you.
Yeah, I know my kids. Yeah. They are. Trust me, I've already won the award for meanest mom in the world. Yeah. So everyone else is off the hook. And then you want slow, because just like you said, like teens, their brains haven't fully developed the risk assessment. So you don't want a car that's going to tempt a teenager to speed, to say, yeah, take this corner, you know, a little bit aggressively. Because, I mean, I know that, you know, with you testing cars, with I testing cars, there are cars out there that are just like, yeah, drive me hard. That's what I want. That's what I'm built for. And there's no way a teenager should be behind the wheel of a car like that. You want to get them something slow. It's the same, you know, when they were little, you got a bike with training wheels, you put them in a helmet. It's the same idea.
Right.
And then the other thing, and this is something that I always encourage parents to do, and you really talk about kids hating me, but here goes. You really, as a parent, have to ask yourself, is my child ready to drive? Just because the kid is 16, does not mean that it's safe for them to hit the road. And it's not just about keeping your kids safe. It's about keeping everyone else on the road safe. So if your kid's not showing a lot of maturity when it comes to making choices, you know, when it comes to even basic risk assessment, maybe hold off on the car keys or allowing them to get their license for a couple of years until they can prove that they're really responsible enough to handle it. And you're gonna, you know, you're gonna feel really mean. Your kid's gonna tell you you're mean. But ultimately, what you might be doing is, you know, saving their life or saving somebody else's life. So it's really worth doing even before you start considering, should I buy my kid a car? The question is, should my kid be driving at all? Are they ready for that level of responsibility?
Right. Yeah, I was talking, it seems a little bit odd, but I was talking to a younger guy from Russia. And we were talking about getting a driver's license. He said, I need to have my parents sign off, my teacher sign off. It was like a third person that would kind of vouch for my level of maturity before I could even consider going from sort of their version of a permit phase to a graduated license. And I'm like, you know, that's not maybe a terrible idea.
Yeah. I mean, and it really does depend on the kids. I mean, look, there's some kids that, you know, speaking of, you know, living in Iowa, you know, there are kids who've been driving farm trucks and driving tractors for years, and at 14 are mature enough to handle driving a car on the road. And then there's some kids who at 19 just still aren't ready yet because they haven't, you know, they haven't learned how to assess the risk appropriately, or they aren't thinking through the consequences. And I mean, you've really got to think about it as a car is, you know, it's a means of transportation, but it's also incredibly deadly. So you really want to be sure that your child is ready.
Yeah, I got an email from a young woman the other day that wanted to buy a car, and she had a couple of, and she surprised me with her choices, because it was a, her mom offered to sell her her 2012 Camry. But she was looking at a Jeep, and I said, you know, your mom's car, it's boring. It's new enough where it has some safety technology in it. It's affordable enough where you can probably afford to buy it and repair it when it breaks, versus a used Jeep, which are traditionally very overpriced. And depending on how it was treated before, may not to be the best, you know, best, most reliable vehicle. And she kind of emailed me back and said, yeah, I think you're right. And I was actually happy to hear that. So.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, we have on, you know, on the best cars for teens list, we have cars like, you know, the 2020 Toyota Corolla, which I absolutely love for teens, because like you buy that for your kid at, you know, 16, 17, when they're ready, they'll be able to take that to their first job when they're 22, 23,
right,
and continue to drive it for a couple more years. I mean, with regular maintenance, that's just going to last forever. And you've got to think about, you know, what a gift that's going to be, you know, to a young professional to not have to worry about a car payment in addition to any kind of student loan payment. It's going to give them freedom to maybe accept a job that maybe pays a little bit less, but that they love to do, because no one wants to just work, you know, for their car.
Right.
So getting the car and taking care of it. The other thing too is, you know, the cars on these, on the list actually go up to $40,000. And we're not saying that you should spend $40,000 on a car for your teenager, but, you know, if you're in the market for a new car and you know your teenager is going to learn to drive on it or occasionally drive it, you know, going for something, you know, like a Hyundai Sonata or a Toyota Camry hybrid, like those cars are nice enough for you to drive to work every day, but safe enough for your teen to drive on weekend. Or, you know, if you've got, say, maybe a 12-year-old at home and you're in the market for a new car, you should really be thinking, all right, in 4 years, my child's going to learn to drive on it. So looking at the ones that are going to be good for teens, thinking ahead so you don't have to, you know, buy a new car because your kid turned 16. That is something that's really worthwhile to think about as well. You know, the kind of car that you want to maybe pass down to your teenager. And we also, you know, took a look at a lot of used cars as well and have recommendations. You can go to usnews.com/cars, see the full list of cars for teens that's got some used cars on the list that are maybe a little bit more affordable. And also, you know, but what's nice about used cars now is a lot of the safety features that we're talking about, these active safety features are now available on the used car market. So you're not doing your kid a disservice or making them any less safe by putting them in, you know, a 2017 Kia Sorento as opposed to a 2020 Toyota Camry. They're right. Still going to be, you know, it still has all the safety features that the newer car has.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And for people to, you make a really good point about thinking a little bit further ahead. You know, as you start to shop for your car, consider that would be a good car for your kids when they get to be that age. And it's so important that as parents to continually, as their kids are in the car, you know, model good behavior too. And why not do it in a car that has all the safety features in it as well? So.
Yeah, well, especially the modeling the good behavior, because if you don't want your teenager to do it, you better not be doing it. I mean, they're going to smell the hypocrisy coming a mile away.
Yeah.
If you're worried about your teen being on the phone, you know, don't have your phone nearby, even, you know, reachable while you're driving the car. If you don't want your teen to cut people off, you don't want your teen to, you know, corner and tailgate, you better not be doing those things either.
Yeah, absolutely. Before I let you go, you and I do a little radio show together up in the NPR station up in Maine, and the host up there always asks us, you know, what kind of fun things we've been driving lately. And I know you kind of took a little bit of time off because of COVID for driving things. You mentioned the Mini Electric as kind of an interesting vehicle that you've driven lately. Has there been anything else?
So first I have to say the Mini Electric is also my kid's favorite car, because that thing corners so well and you have all that on-demand torque. So anytime you make a U-turn with kids in the backseat, you're able to just toss them around. And even if you're only going 15 miles an hour, it was just so much fun. But other interesting stuff, I also mentioned the Kia K5. That's a new one that's coming out. Really a lot, just a quality sedan. I mean, it's attractive. It's comfortable, but you can have a good time with it. It does fine in traffic, does fine on the highway, and it's a bargain relative to other sedans of the same size on the market. I also tested the Chevy Trailblazer. And that's one that I actually was really surprised that I like. Very attractive price point. It starts at just about $20,000. And it's about the size of, you know, a Hyundai Tucson, or a little bit smaller than a Honda CR-V, but a lot less expensive. Mm-hmm. It's really rugged, good looks. They've got, what I love about it is they've got, you know, available two tones so that the roof is a different color than the rest of the car. Looks really, really good. I did enjoy the Chevy Tahoe. It's expensive. Mm. Man, when you're in it, I felt like a Secret Service agent. I really felt like it would be cool to have, you know, some diplomat in the back seat to drive around. And then this week I'm testing the Honda CR-V Hybrid. And the CR-V it's one of those cars where it's never been a favorite of mine, but I can recognize why it works for so many people. Mm. But with the hybrid, and it's got a good electric mode, getting, you know, almost 40 miles to the gallon in it. And for a crossover of that size, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Really enjoying it and just thinking like, wow, this is becoming more and more of a compelling argument. Just because it's so practical. I mean, there's nothing thrilling about it, but if you're looking for a car, I just want to go to work. I just want to drive my kids around and I don't really want to think about it. And that is a good, that's a measure of a good car to me. The CR-V Hybrid is just a great one.
Yeah. How would you compare the CR-V Hybrid to the Toyota RAV4 Hybrid?
I like the CR-V Hybrid better. It's a little bit quieter. Yeah. And, you know, the one that I have, it's a little bit more of an upmarket trim. It's a little bit more premium. Mm-hmm. So I would give the slight edge to the CR-V Hybrid, but honestly, they're about the same. And I would just go, if people are considering one or the other, I would just go with whichever one you like best. There's really, I don't think, enough of a difference to say like, oh, one is bad, you know, one is that much better than the other. It's just personal preference. They're both great SUVs. And the fact that you can get it, you know, now with a hybrid powertrain, I think it's really, really worthwhile, really, really worth considering either one.
Yeah. I haven't driven it yet. I've seen it and done a little bit of research about it, and it really looks interesting. And I haven't driven anything really exciting lately, although just this week I'm driving the Mazda 3 sedan. Ooh. With all wheel drive. And I think Mazda forgot to tell somebody that, you know, it was a kind of, well, price-wise, I guess it could be out of economy car reach, but it's a compact car with some really nice features in it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, besides the traditional heated seats and all of that, but the idea of a heads-up display and leather interior, this was a premium version, which prices it, you know, on the high side, but to think that this compact car, really, really pretty impressive what they did, and they really kind of, you know, some people might say, well, they took away a little bit of the sportiness of it. Well, they kind of, I think, mainstreamed it a little bit, and yeah. It came out really well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you talk about, I love Mazdas because they're a little bit more upscale than you would expect from, you know, a mainstream brand. And yeah, it's more expensive than a, you know, similarly specced out, you know, Hyundai, but the Mazda is going to be more fun to drive. And then when you compare it to what you'd have to pay, you know, BMW or Audi to get the same features, it starts to look really attractive.
Yeah, it does. It does.
And I mean, the Mazda 3, that's the sedan, is it one I have, you know, that I've been in. But I mean, ever since the redesign, you know, both the sedan and the hatchback on the Mazda 3 are just gorgeous, gorgeous cars. So it's one of those cars that, you know, while you're walking towards it in the parking lot, it's going to put a smile on your face. I will say it's not as sporty as it used to be, but it's more comfortable. Yep. And just getting old and crotchety, but I'll gladly take a little bit more comfort these days.
Yeah, a little bit extra comfort's fine. And you're right. Every time I've walked up to this car, especially walking up to the front of it, I look at it and say, they did a really nice job with the style of it. It really was. So, Jamie, I want to thank you for taking some time out of your day and joining us on AAA Car Conversations With. And if people want to read more about what's going on at US World News Report, just that easy, right? Just go on.
Yeah, just go to cars.usnews.com, yeah. Or just go to usnews.com, because, you know, we cover a lot more than cars. So any big decision that you're trying to make, US News can help you out with.
There you go. Well, thank you very much. Let's see if I actually know how to end things here. And
all right, John, thank you so much.